You're listening to Around Comics, episode 98.
From Chicago, this is Around Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman. I'm joined, as always, by the co-host of the show, Mr. Brian Salazar.
My spider sense is tingling. Oh, that's not my spider sense.
My phone, it's in my pants. Tom Caters is still on assignment, so he will...
He's not on assignment.
Tom will be back.
We sent him out on a...
Next week.
Job to do.
A job?
Something, anything.
Tom, the man,
Tom,
with,
go,
the man with the heavy shoes.
Go do something.
So Tom, all the folks that love to listen to Tom's quips, don't worry, he'll be back on Monday. But this is going to be our Spider-Man 3 Spectacular.
Spider-Man 3 Spectacular.
Our unspectacular Spider-Man episode.
Yeah.
So it's I will throw that disclaimer out there. If you haven't seen the movie yet, you may want to hold off until you do, because we're going to be talking in depth about
scene by scene. We're going through every break it down. You know, the wonderful thing about us talking about Spider-Man 3 is now, you know, the $18 I spent at the movie last night is a write-off. Which is
hey,
cool.
There you go. Nice.
I can so
need to save my movie stub.
Yeah.
But so we will be talking about that. But before we talk about the movie, I want to let you know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
InStockTrades is your home for all things Spider-Man. To help celebrate the release of Spider-Man 3, InStockTrades.com has the new Spider-Man Omnibus discounted 35%. The Omnibus contains over 40 issues and 1,000 pages of the earliest Spider-Man adventures for $64.99. You can choose from either the classic Amazing Fantasy 15 cover or the Alex Ross variant cover. Remember that InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices, and all orders over $50 ship for free.
They do.
I've got that. I bought the...
The omnibus,
yeah, it's a tome. And as Norton said, he's going to put it on his bookshelf, and it's his Bible, his new Bible, his Spider-Man Bible. It's impressive.
Well, you can put it in the back of his truck in the wintertime.
Weigh it down.
It's huge.
It is big.
And I
plan on beating someone to death with it at some point.
You could. Drop it on your foot. You'll break a toe off. I was over at InStock Trades, and they've got a ton of other Spider-Man stuff.
You ran in? You just stopped in the shop?
I was virtually over. Oh. Actually, they do have a storefront over in Indiana. You know who else has a storefront?
Dark Tower Comics.
Yes, they do. And Around Comics is recorded every Friday.
Except this is a
Saturday. We normally record every Friday at 7 o'clock at Dark Tower Comics and Collectibles, located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you are ever in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you.
And remember that your Around Comics experience isn't complete until you've read this week's Long Box of Love. Every Thursday episode of Around Comics has a wonderfully handcrafted webcomic by Brian Bowles. Check it out every Thursday at aroundcomics.com.
His free comic book day one was it was kind of a funny homage to the Elvis snippet that we had the week before with the I'll rip your tongue out.
I didn't see it yet. I haven't seen it. Yeah. I didn't know he did a free comic book day one.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's funny. And then the Fraction Josh Flanagan one was probably my favorite one that he's done.
Yeah, that was really good.
Maybe since the Queen of Country, which will be my all-time favorite.
Of course.
All right, folks. Spider-Man does whatever a spider can, and he does it at the box office like no other comic book hero in movie history. When Spider-Man 1 came out, the world was finally able to see a live-action superhero movie that captured the sheer action and amazement that comic fans have seen on the printed page for decades. It helped usher in a series of financially successful comics-adapted movies and told the world that superheroes could be entertaining for audiences everywhere. Today we're talking about the latest installment of the Spider-Man movie franchise, and as special bonus, we're joined by one of the behind-the-scenes creators that helped bring the wall crawler to theaters, Mr. Gabe Hardman. Gabe, first of all, welcome aboard. It's great to have you on the panel today.
Oh, thanks.
Why don't you let us know what your involvement was in Spider-Man 3?
I did storyboards for Sam Raimi. I mean, I also supervise the previs computer animatic sequences. You know, the pre-production stuff that we do just to develop the sequences and you know, kind of a 3D moving version of the storyboards. So I work with like a team of animators to, you know, put the things together and show them to Sam. And the main sequences I did were the subway sequence where he's fighting Sandman when he's in the black suit in the subway, and at the end of the movie, a lot of the big finale at the end of the movie.
How did you first get involved with storyboarding?
I'd always been a big movie geek. But I'd worked in comics before that. I'd worked, you know, at Marvel, a little bit of DC and stuff, doing some superhero stuff, and moved out to LA just with the idea that, I don't know, somehow I could get into doing storyboards because it sounded like a little more lucrative line of work than drawing comic books.
Wait, there's more money in Hollywood than in comic books?
Yeah, I know. Hate to break it to you, but. And so I moved out here, kind of randomly met somebody who, you know, knew a storyboard agent who got me some jobs, and then I did the first Austin Powers movie.
Oh.
And that was like, it was like this tiny $16 million movie that nobody could understand at the time. And it was relatively successful, and I just got a lot more jobs from there.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, it seems like, because we talked to him, and for people that may not know, we met Gabe in New York. You were at the New York Comic Con, and we met and talked a bit there, and I immediately wanted to have you on the show and kind of beat you with emails until you agreed. But you were saying that, you know, it's like you were constantly sort of getting called to be on different films, and is that... I mean, once you're sort of on a film that's successful or does well in the box office, is it just sort of... perpetuates from there, and you're a name then to the directors of the production teams that are looking for storyboard artists?
Yeah, it's probably less about the film doing well as it is just knowing people within the industry. I mean, it's just about meeting the production designer or anybody else, producer or whoever, will just give your name to somebody else if they like your work. So, I mean, you know, Austin Powers at the time, tiny movie. I got other movies from there, but it kind of stayed on a certain mid level of stuff until I did like X-Men 2, and since then I've pretty much only been doing superhero movies. But,
well, I know you. Yeah, and we talked about that a little bit. Is like you almost, you know, are now kind of the superhero storyboard guy. Just about every superhero film that's comes up, it seems like you're getting called, and you've actually turned some down because you're a fan of the stuff. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I've certainly, recently I turned down Indiana Jones 4 because I was too big of a fan of Raiders of the Lost Ark. I didn't really want to work on that movie because I didn't want to ruin my childhood dreams of. I don't know, being an archaeologist or whatever, but mostly I'd actually been working just solidly on superhero movies. You know, Spider-Man 3 was like the biggest, longest, like on it for 18 months, and it was like totally exhausting. And right at the end of that, the Hulk 2 and Iron Man were both offered to me, and I just couldn't take them because I just had, you know, these movies are just, they're so visual effects intensive, and they're loads of work and very difficult. It's lots of fun stuff, and obviously I was a fan before, and it's very cool to work on them, but, you know, I couldn't handle yet another superhero gig immediately after the epic Spider-Man 4 or Spider-Man 3 experience.
You kind of need a palate cleanser in between.
A nice slow drama.
Yeah, so nice romantic comedy somewhere.
Yeah, well, I'm working for Ben Stiller right now. He's directing this. It's a comedy. It's like a, but it's, I mean, it's kind of an action comedy. It's like a comedy about the Vietnam War, so. See how that works out.
Funny. You think Vietnam War, you think comedy. That's
exactly.
Well, run us through a little bit of the process as far as, like, when you come onto the, a film and how that sort of plays out as far as your relationship with the director or the writers or you know, what kind of, like, is your job?
It varies wildly from film to film. I mean, there are certainly jobs where you go on and you just, you meet with the director and he gives you a list of shots and you go away and you draw storyboards and hand them in. And it's as simple as that. Or the other end of the spectrum is on Spider-Man, was very collaborative with Sam and you come up with ideas, you pitch them to him, he gives you ideas, you go away, you draw some up, you put them up on a big board. It's kind of like working in animation where it's very fluid and, you know, you move bits of sequences around and it's all about developing the sequences. I mean, the action sequences in Spider-Man in the script are like a sentence long. It's basically like Sandman and Spider-Man fight, you know? and then we just develop a bunch of ideas and then I stick with the sequence and supervise as we do the animatics and follow it all the way through shooting. I mean, to the point of on the subway sequence. I mean, I was on set the first day, and Sam's looking at the set and going, "Well, that pipe up there wasn't wasn't in the previs. What? How do we deal with that? You know?" And I'm like, "I don't know." But I mean, he's very, very detail oriented when it comes to, and very, very into having everything boarded or pre-visualized in some way before he shoots it, which is cool, but it can be also overwhelming.
Sure. Well, you also work in sequential art, you know, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. What's the biggest difference for you in doing sequential storytelling in comic books and laying out storyboards? For people that think that is very similar, what are the big differences?
I mean, I think the biggest difference is just that, you know, even though I like to do, you know, I like to do good-looking storyboards, to do nice drawings, it doesn't really matter whether you do or not. I mean, it's not the final product. And it's a guide for everybody else on the film to have an idea what the director wants out of a particular sequence. And it's also a lot more, doing sequential art, doing comic book art is very, it's deducing, tell the story in this many panels on this page and, you know, you have to pare everything down as minimally as possible. And in storyboards, it's, you know, if you need a shot of something, you just draw it. It's not like you don't have the, you need an insert, you draw it, you need a big wide shot, you draw it, and they shoot it, and they'll cut it together later and throw the things out later.
Before you got into storyboarding, you know, you said you had a interest in film, but as far as the craft of film, I imagine you have to know the technical language, or like you were talking about, different shots and that kind of thing. Was that something you knew going in, or was that something you learned as you got into the business?
Kind of both. I mean, I've been, you know, big film geek, and I'd read a lot about filmmaking and had always intended to have something to work in films in some way. I mean, to direct films. So I, in a fan-ish sort of way, I knew quite a bit that when I first went into doing storyboards, I was a little bit surprised that the stuff that I was just reading for fun was really helpful in communicating with directors and stuff. And then over the course of it, you're just thrown into it and you learn a lot. And certainly doing this sort of stuff it's most important to just know about filmmaking. I mean, drawing well is great and you do need to be able to represent the things that you're trying to represent in the storyboards, but if you don't know filmmaking, it's not going to work out for you.
We what was it like for you? I'm sure that you've seen the movie now, and what was it like for you to see those action sequences finally get translated to the big screen? You know, whenever you first saw it on, and I'm assuming that you saw it in a theater.
I saw it. The cast and crew screening was fun.
Were you like, yeah, I've seen this a million times and I'm sick of looking at it,
there's definitely something very cool about the thing being up there. The thing not, you know, I mean, I've seen virtually everything in the movie, like in editorial or in kind of, you know, all out of order and on bad avid outputs or whatever, but seeing it up on the big screen, definitely a thrill. At the same time, it's very hard for me not to just see the board I drew or think of the previs that we did or it's very hard for me to look at the movie and just look at the movie as a movie, but think about the things that aren't in there.
So you were on set, or you worked on the film for 18 months, you said? How much of that is like on set? How much of that is pre-production? What's sort of the breakdown of that time?
I think I was on it for about like 6 or 7 months before shooting started, and then we shot from like January of 06, I guess, to the end of July, or somewhere around July of 06, and then there were three different rounds of reshoots after that, and I was on the show long after the film wrapped, which is weird because I do things for pre-production, you know. But I just hung around, and Stan just wanted me to hang around and, like, you know, draw a storyboard that, you know, they can throw into the edit where they're planning the reshoots and stuff. And I mean, the last 4 months or so of it were pretty easy because I didn't really do that much, but the previous were so incredibly intense, they nearly killed me. So it kind of balanced out.
Evened out in the wash, huh?
What was your favorite scene in the movie? Whether you worked on it or not.
Oh, I didn't even really work on it. I mean, I think my favorite scene is the Birth of Sandman thing. That's all really Sony Image Works. Scott Stockdyke, the visual effects supervisor, did like a really great job on, I thought. And, you know, because I didn't really think that the Spider-Man movies were had great visual effects before, and you know, a lot of them in this picture are kind of weak. I thought that a couple of, you know, I thought that the Sandman stuff came off a lot better, a lot more exciting and convincing than I expected it would.
Oh, that was fantastic.
And also, really, just my favorite things are in my subway sequence, which I was not entirely happy with the way it came out. Spider-Man grinding Sandman's head off against the train and all the kind of uber violent Warner Brothers cartoon stuff that I was able to put in there, some of which didn't really make it through, which was unfortunate.
Do you have like a...
Because I had him, you know, a train running over him and his arms getting cut off and Spider-Man hitting him with a railroad tie and stuff like that. And I was really unhappy that didn't make it through.
Yeah, that sounds like it would have been fun. Do you have like a... Well, I guess they never did the actual production on it, but I mean, do you have like a reel of the animations that you did for that kind of stuff, or are you able?
Oh yeah, well, no. Technically, I do not have anything regarding Spider-Man 3, and I don't want a call from like Grant Curtis or Sony or somebody saying to give it back. There exists that stuff. And they did. Oh, they shot most of it, and most of it was a lot of it was semi-finished. It was cut out relatively late in the game.
Oh, really?
One thing that didn't that got cut out very early in the game, though, was when I pitched that Spider-Man would web a because Spider-Man's supposed to be kind of a dick in this part because he's got a black suit. So that he webs a railroad tie and like whips it towards Sandman, and the railroad tie nails Sandman's hand to his face. But that didn't last that long.
I
wanted it to be a Sam Raimi movie, you know?
Right.
It's like if we were going to go for dark, crazy stuff, I wanted it to be the Sam Raimi stuff that I would like to see.
Well, whose idea was like the Saturday Night Fever dancing down the streets of New York?
Not yours?
Asking the wrong guy. I don't know.
Hey, so speaking of Sam Raimi, Where was his car in the movie? Did his car make it in?
Oh, it's Uncle Ben's car.
Oh, that's Uncle Ben's car?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Flashbacks?
Yeah. Okay. Because it's in every movie that he does, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, they had it brought out, and it was, we shot that stuff next to the library with old Uncle Ben. That was actually the last day of principal photography. It was in New York.
Okay. Well, we had Sandman, Venom, and Harry Osborn as either Hobgoblin or Green Goblin 2 or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
If you had your way and could have picked any Spider-Man villain to be in the movie, who would it have been? If not one of those.
I wouldn't have picked Venom. Certainly. I mean, I know there's a lot of affection for him and everything, but I think that certainly with kind of the tone that Sam is good at and works well with, I think that the classic villains would have been better. I mean, Vulture would have been cool. You know, I don't know. I kind of like the goofier Ditko era stuff.
Molten Man, maybe. A nice Molten Man appearance.
I would have loved to have seen the Hydro Man Sandman team up and where Spider Man you know yeah where they trick him into Mud Man you know
yeah but I at the same time I personally liked the symbiote stuff and apart from Toby's haircut and the whole Hitler Robert Smith cure thing that he had going I really liked that arc of the story and him going bad and having to come back again and all that sort of stuff, as goofball as it is. I just wish that the Venom thing had just been saved for another movie.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, the actual playing out of Brock and Venom and all that sort of stuff.
That was, I kind of felt that it, I had said this before, is like, I thought the problem with, you know, like the Batman films was it was too many storylines, too many villains,
yeah.
You know, too many. And that's what I was sort of afraid with this film is, this, you know, you have three different villains in it. I thought that it was a well done job of sort of shutting down each one of those storylines at a point and going on to something else and then bringing it back. And I thought that was interesting how that was done. But at the same time, it felt like there were things, especially with the symbiote storyline, that it could have really been developed a lot more had it been its own film or another, you know, another film. But
yeah, or even start the symbiote thing in this one and deal with Brock and Venom and all that stuff in the next movie. You know?
Right.
Which may have been the plan at one point and didn't quite work out that way.
Ah, I see. Is that, well, you know, that's a good question because I sort of got the same feeling about Gwen Stacy. Is that it was like, what was the point of having that character?
And can they please stop teasing Dr. Connors and finally get a lizard story?
Oh, the lizard. That's what I'd love to see. I mean, like, they've been setting it up forever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, since
that's
the
one of my favorite villains. I'd love to see that. You know, that'd be awesome.
And if they're, you know, I think there's, and it even goes back to the original comics, the kind of the trend or the kind of the path that we've seen in the comic book movies is that the series goes deeper, more villains, bigger, better, more. And in Spider-Man, there are kind of built-in storylines. You know, it would be great to see a Sinister Six movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, hopefully if...
Well,
if
that's three times too many villains, though.
Yeah. I don't know. That would be tough to pull off, I think.
Well, you know, in a heist movie would be fun, you know.
Have you worked with Sam Raimi before?
No, this was the first time. And I was working on X-Men 3 up in Canada, and that was like a mess and a half. And so I got a call to work to do this thing, and thought, yeah, it's in L.A., and I'll be at home more and everything, and then see my wife, and I came back and probably saw her less in the time I was working on Spider-Man than I did when I was in Vancouver. But, I hadn't worked with them before, and they're a very, very insular little crowd. The people who work around Sam, and he, it's like another world from the rest of Hollywood where the director wears a suit every day. And it's a strange little group, and it was kind of, it was hard to get in there with the rest of them, but it actually worked. It ended up working out pretty well for me that I had kind of some perspective on the Spider-Man movies. You know, I hadn't worked on all of them. A lot of the people who worked on them have just basically been at that office at Sony for the last several years. You know,
right?
So I came in kind of fresh, and it was at least good for me. And I wasn't the biggest fan of the Spider-Man movies before. I mean, I liked them, but I felt like there were a lot of deficiencies in them, story-wise and giant coincidence-wise. And there's a lot of things that I think are great about him, and I think Sam's a great director, but I was happy to come into something and have a little bit of perspective and not feel quite so tied to it.
Sure.
I mean, I was very into, I worked on Superman Returns, mm-hmm. and I love the Richard Donner movie, the first Superman movie. And I was not entirely happy with the way that movie went. And it's actually weirdly, it's better for me to be like a fan of movies and go to movies and see them, or not exactly be the biggest fan of the movies that I work on, because it helps to give you a perspective and stuff. It's work.
Sure. What are your favorite superhero movies of all time? You mentioned Superman, which I think is definitely a list topper for a lot of people.
Yeah, Superman. I loved Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. I thought Batman, I mean, yeah, Katie Holmes and all that, whatever, but I love that movie, you know. And just tonally, it's a lot more up my alley, and it was epic and it smart, and I'm very much looking forward to the second one.
They're actually filming in Chicago right now. They're
oh wow, cool.
And they're doing scenes downtown kind of as we speak, I think, aren't they?
I know they were last week. I'm not. I don't.
They actually had a fire breakout.
I'm not enough of a film geek to pay attention.
They said it was. I think there were even pictures in the newspaper. There was an actual fire that broke out near the set, and so you had pictures of the Chicago Fire Department with the Gotham Police Department, which was kind of
cool. Right. That's cool.
What other films have you worked on?
The Superman one, X-Men 2 and 3. All the Austin Powers movies, Lemony Snicket.
Ooh.
I've worked on this awful, on the horrendous Cat in the Hat movie. and a couple of Barry Sonnenfeld movies. I mean, the Men in Black 2 and Wild Wild West. And a lot of them are bad, you know. But, you know, it's work. A lot of them were really good experiences. Cat in the Hat was one of the best movie working experiences I had, because they're good people and it was a decent long show and everything, but you know, the movie was horrendous.
Well, how does that sort of feel like? I mean, you put in good work on a project and sort of, you know, beyond your control, it's good or bad.
Yeah.
You know, what's that like sort of experiencing that?
I don't know. I mean, it's not a job, you know. So I mean, you go and you do the job, and you're usually off the job for months and months and months before the movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
So you're kind of over it, and you're on some other show. And if it's good, that's great. I mean, I thought X-Men 2 was a pretty good movie, and I was kind of surprised because it was a mess while we were working on it. But Bryan Singer, at least a lot of the time, has the ability to really pull stuff together in a kind of ephemeral way that no one can exactly figure out how. And I thought that movie came out pretty well, even though it's kind of disjointed.
We were actually talking about Lemony Snicket earlier this week. That is one of my favorite all-time movies.
Oh, really?
I love that movie.
That's cool.
He's laughing at me because I love that movie.
Well, I laughed at you when you told me that, too.
I thought it was fantastic.
I like the movie. I don't know if it's favorite all time. That's a pretty, you know.
Oh, visually, it's a stunning movie. So
yeah, it was awesome going on the set to that movie. It was like stepping into some Universal horror movie from the 30s or something, you know. They had a big hangar in, you know, down south of L.A. that was just filled with those sets, and it was great.
Speaking about being on set, what kind of interaction do you have with the other, you know, people, whether it's the actors or, you know, directors? Obviously, you have a very close relationship with them working on it, but
yeah.
What about the other, the cast members?
It's, for the most part, unless it's an actor who has a lot of pull with the movie, it's usually limited to I'm hanging around trying to waiting to talk to the director in Video Village by the monitors where the director's chairs are and stuff,
uh-huh.
And they sit there too, so sometimes I chat with them, you know. I mean, there's not a huge amount of interaction, just, you know, not professionally, really.
what's next up on the docket for you? Have you signed on to work on another movie yet?
No, I mean, I'm finishing up this Ben Stiller movie. I got a call for Wolverine, which was supposed to have already started, but they pushed that, and I don't know exactly what the story is with it at this point. You know, I may do that if it works out, but I may take a little bit of time off just to try to work on more comic stuff for myself.
All right, well, let's talk about that for a second. Whenever we saw you in New York, you showed us some pages from an original graphic novel that you have, and Sal and I were both just blown away by the pages that you showed us. It was fantastic stuff. Is there any new news about your OGN?
Not exactly. I mean, it's like, you know, it's out to a lot of people, and the reception has been really, really positive from publishers, and it hasn't quite happened, but I think that it definitely will. I think that I'm relatively close to getting a publisher for it, and just moving ahead and working on other stuff as well. I mean, the OGN is called Heathen Town. It's like a sort of atmospheric horror book, hopefully in black and white, if I can get somebody to agree to publish it that way.
And that was written by...
Oh, it was written by my wife.
By your wife, okay. That's what
Karina Becco. And she's written a lot of horror short stories and stuff, and have them published in anthologies and a lot of smaller stuff.
Well, and I know... I know you're working on some, or you've worked on some of your own film stuff. I know you sent me a link to your website where you had a couple of short films that you had done.
Yeah, there,
some really cool stuff.
Yeah, I directed a short a couple of years ago called Wrong Way Up, and it was in like 25 or so different film festivals, and premiered at the Seattle Film Festival, and it was like in front of a feature, and it was in a huge theater and stuff. And I've been working on trying to get a feature of my own together for the last couple of years, but it's harder than you'd think to raise like $1 million, you know? Which almost happened like a couple of times and then fell apart, and which was to some degree what spurred me on to do the comic stuff again, just because I was kind of frustrated with just not being able to tell stories that were mine and that I was interested in, and also just really wanting to go back and do comics work that I was proud of as opposed to the comics work I did initially.
Yeah, you still won't tell me the assumed name that you worked under when you were working at Marvel years ago.
That's true, I won't.
Warren Ellis.
Yeah. No,
Chuck Austin.
You know, it's just a bunch of stuff. You know, Marvel published a lot of books in like 1994, 95.
A couple.
And I drew one of those books.
Yeah, that.
And it wasn't very good.
It narrows it down.
Well, what's out there right now that you're reading? What are you liking out there?
Well, I mean, I know I'm not supposed to talk about it on the show, but I love Queen and Country.
Oh, jeez.
I knew he was going to be a good guest.
And I actually really liked that Brubaker Daredevil. The last two trades of it.
Nice.
I enjoyed.
Good stuff.
It has relatively few superheroes in it. And I read 52, and I mostly enjoyed it. A lot of things sort of happened, but mostly it was because I loved Animal Man, and I loved The Question in like the late 80s or whatever. And so I was just into following those storylines.
So how do you like...
Oh, and I loved Gotham Central, too, so that kind of all came together.
Well, and that's interesting, being an old Question fan, but a fan of Gotham Central, how are you with Montoya being the Question?
I'm kind of fine with it. I think it's kind of cool, you know? I mean, I don't really have a problem with it at all. You know, I mean, we'll see where it actually goes, because you haven't really seen much of any of it. For me, it was just, you know, it was just slightly problematic that the one circumstance where you see her actually, you know, kind of as the Question is in this kind of wild, fantastical sort of setting that doesn't really fit with either Montoya or the Question very well.
Yeah.
But that's just me, you know.
All right. Well, speaking of Mr. Rucka, I know Whiteout's in production now.
Whiteout is up in Montreal.
How come you're not working on that? This is a comic book movie. Come on.
Kate Beckinsale. I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, right. No, I don't know. I never got a call about that. Or if I had, I would have been on Spider-Man still, because I only got off it last January.
So you said you did see the film. What did you what was your final opinion of Spider-Man 3 as a finished product?
I came out of it feeling fairly good about it. I mean, there's a lot of goofy stuff and a lot of awkward stuff, but overall, I actually thought it came together fairly well, and I enjoyed the picture. I came out of Superman Returns kind of pissed off, you know? but I came out of this like feeling like, yeah, I mean, it's got problems and stuff, but I liked it. It was, you know, I enjoyed the movie.
Well, I certainly did. I felt the same. I mean, it wasn't certainly a perfect or maybe even, but for a fun Spider-Man movie, it was damn good. I enjoyed it.
So would you be interested in Spider-Man 4 if you get the call?
No. No, I don't know. Yeah, I would do it. I mean, it depends. I mean, I don't know if Sam's going to do it, and it just depends on what happens. I kind of can't imagine Sam doing it because I think he's literally only been making Spider-Man movies for like 6 years straight or something. But
it'll be a decade if he.
But it would just depend on you know who was doing it. That's like the most important thing.
Yeah, because it looks like they're when they do come, and I'm sure there will be a Spider-Man 4. The franchise.
Yeah,
just
there
makes,
will be one. It's just a question of who does it.
Just makes too much money, but yeah, it looks like it's going to be pretty much a new cast, new director. So hopefully, a nice reimagining of it. So
we'll see. You know, I mean, hopefully they can kind of. I would imagine. Hopefully they could just kind of take the best of what these movies have set up and
move forward. With. Yeah. Have Well, since you're our Spider-Man 3 insider, and you know it's just coming out this week, any inside information you can give us on your time spent on the set or anything in the film?
I don't know what constitutes inside information.
Did Sam Raimi show up in a dress at any time? You know?
No, Sam Raimi is a weird guy, and he's like this kind of shambly sort of always wearing a rumpled suit, always. Wandering around without any apparent focus, and he Republican guy, although, you know, I get along with him very well, nonetheless. But and one of the first meetings I had with him was it wasn't one of the first, but it was like the first when he was going to give me the big subway sequence to do, and he was like, "You've done a lot of good work, pal." He called everybody buddy all the time because he can't remember your name. And although he did remember my name eventually, and he was like, "All right, buddy, I want to give you this big sequence, but I have to be sure that you understand Peter Parker's pain." And I was like, "What?" And he was like, "All right." And there was a, you know, on the table in front of me in his office, there was this folded over piece of paper. And he was like, "Look inside that piece of paper." And I looked inside, and there was a push pin inside. And he was like, "What do you think I'm going to do with that?" And I was like, "I have no idea." And he was like, "I'm going to stab you with that push pin so you understand Peter Parker's pain." I was like, "Well, how about you don't?" You know? And so we kind of got past that, and the meeting went on. We talked about the subway thing and everything, and I was about to go, and he was like, "Wait, you're forgetting something." He picks up the pin, and he stabs me with it in the arm.
Is that common practice by directors?
No, not really.
Wanting you to feel.
So, yeah, there was a lot of other stuff like that. I mean, I think that I got along well in the movie, just basically as Sam's straight man or something. You know, I mean, he's very goofy, and he introduced the first time I was on the show, he introduced me to the whole art department as his cousin, and that like people should take me seriously, even though. No, I mean, I have this idea that I'm a storyboard artist, but, you know, and I'll be around a lot, but just
humor you, just, right?
Yeah, just humor the kid, basically. You know? And there was some actual, like, discussions among the production designer at the time, and people, I heard that people were inquiring to find out if I was actually his cousin, you know, if I was actually from Detroit, and that was why I was on the show.
But great.
So he, and then the cousin thing, he never mentioned it again, and then, like, you know, 9 months later, the cousin thing came back up again in some giant meeting, you know? he's a goofy guy, but he's entertaining to work for. He's a good guy.
Certainly sounds that way, as long as he's not stabbing you With a pushpin.
Yeah, exactly.
You notice the next day on set, everybody had, like, Band-Aids on their arms for some weird reason.
No, I think it was just me.
Well, I'd
say... Nobody could really figure out why.
I certainly consider that insider information. I don't think we would have got that anywhere else.
Yeah, probably not. It's not valuable information, but it's insider.
Well, I don't know. It provided some pretty...
That's all we're looking for, Gabe. We're easily amused.
Well, Gabe, thanks so much for coming on with us. You know, it was great meeting you in New York, and just thanks for coming on. We really enjoyed it, and hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime about the next movie you're working on. Get the
OGN published.
Absolutely. I really enjoy the show. You know, I mean, that's why I came to talk to you guys in the first place. You know, listen to it all the time while I was working on the comic and when I've been doing boards and really appreciate it. And if anybody wants to see the comic stuff that I'm working on, the some sample pages from the graphic novel and a comic strip thing that I've been working on called Kinski, they can go to comicspace.com/heathencomics and check it out.
And I absolutely recommend people do it because you are a very talented artist, and Chris wasn't, you know, playing it up at all. The stuff we saw in New York, we were just absolutely blown away by it. So,
well, cool. Well, thanks a lot.
I really look forward to seeing that once it's published. I'm sure it won't be too long.
Yeah, and try and make it to Chicago this year for Wizard World Chicago, and we'll stab you in the arm with a pushpin.
Okay, well, I'll try to make that happen.
Cool. Take it easy, Gabe. Right,
thanks a lot.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And a big thanks to Gabe Hartman. Hopefully we'll see all sorts of stuff from him in the near future, whether it be on the big screen or the
I was kind of excited last night when I went and saw the film, and then I stayed and watched the credits and saw his name. I'm like, I know that guy!
Yeah.
Kinda. I know him. I met him once. I emailed him. But that was kind of neat, so it was interesting to...
Well, you saw, we're recording on Saturday, May 5th, so we both went to opening night.
Yes.
Thoughts on the film?
You know, overall, I enjoyed it. I had fun watching it. You know, the critical comic fan in me obviously wanted to pick stuff apart, and you know, there were parts of it that I thought could have easily been cut out and replaced by more action or something, but overall I thought it was good. I thought the Sandman special effects were awesome. Mm-hmm. I thought Thomas Hayden Church, I thought was a perfect pick for him.
Did a great job.
Thought he looked like Sandman. I thought he you know, in as brief screen time as he had, sort of developed that character. I thought he did a good job of it. I thought the overall, my biggest concern with it, you know, was too many villains, too many storylines, and there were a lot. I mean, there were three villains, all three had their own storylines. There was, and then you had the Mary Jane storyline, and then you had the Gwen Stacy storyline.
I had the Schumacher Batman flash.
Yeah, absolutely.
My eyes.
You know, but I thought it was handled pretty well. There were, like I said, if I really wanted to sit there and nitpick on it, there were things in it that I thought either were overdeveloped that didn't need to be, or things that I wish were developed a little bit more than they had been, like the symbiote. And we talked with Gabe about that. It's like I thought that could have been its own sort of storyline and its own film, really. You could have done one whole film on just the symbiote or not introduce the Venom character. But
one of the I think most accurate for my opinion, I'd seen a post somewhere online that someone described it as they had taken two very good movies and kind of mushed them into one, and I think it hurt the overall movie.
Yeah, I mean, was it like, you know, I think it was not as good as Spider-Man 2. I really, really loved Spider-Man 2.
Spider-Man 2, for a lot of people, is the greatest superhero movie ever. And I think
not for me, but it's
well,
up
for
there.
A lot of
it's
people,
up there.
Sure.
Yeah,
it's in the top three for a while.
Yeah, it certainly isn't. I mean, I think it's a little bit below Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. To me, that's the best.
Batman Begins,
Superman 1, and Spider-Man 2.
Sure,
and X-Men 2.
X-Men 2 is real close.
Those top. I mean, those. But it was still good. I mean, it was. You know, I enjoyed it. I you know, I didn't walk out of there pissed off or upset that I spent, you know, $9.50 on seeing it or whatever. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was good. And, you know, like I said, there were just things in it that I didn't particularly care for. But overall, I thought the Venom actually was better than I thought it was going to be.
I was pleasantly surprised by Venom. Visually, perfect. My only problem with Venom is that reading Venom for years, I've never expected the voice of Venom to be
Topher Grace.
So, you know, I wanted more of a, you know, a raspy, distorted voice whenever he was bonded with
the symbiote. There were some issues with Venom. I mean, like, you know, all of a sudden Topher Grace is, you know, he goes from the kid on that 70s show to, you know, buffed up, you know, super villain. It was kind of weird, but... I mean, there are certainly things I think you could, you know, take away from it and complain about, we will
pick it apart forever, but I think for me, I enjoyed it. I had a good time.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good movie, but I enjoyed
it. You don't think it was a good movie?
No, it was not a good movie, but I enjoyed it, if that makes any sense. It's like what a lot of people say about Heroes, the TV show, is that they enjoy it. It's not well done.
I don't see where you could say that about Spider-Man 3. What was not well done about it? It wasn't badly acted. It wasn't badly scripted.
I thought it was casted extremely well. Okay, to call it, it's not a bad movie, but it wasn't a really good movie. I was underwhelmed.
Okay, but I don't know if I...
It wasn't bad, but I was underwhelmed. Yeah, I didn't walk out of there like I did with Spider-Man 2 going, oh my God, I just saw a great movie. Something that...
Right, it wasn't great.
If you had taken a non-comic book fan to Spider-Man 2 and watched that with them, you both could have come out and said, wow, that was a, you know, very satisfying cinematic experience, where Spider-Man 3, its comic fans will, I think, enjoy it, but people that aren't comic book fans, I think, will... I think they're going to say, wow, there were a lot of problems with that movie.
The audience I was with last night, I don't think were comic book fans.
Did you have a lot of applause at the end of the movie?
Yeah, there was...
Ours was smattered.
It wasn't like, you know... It wasn't a huge run of applause, but I don't really judge a movie on that. I mean, most of the time...
Just that immediate reaction in a lot of comic movies. Yeah, I've noticed if it's a good comic book movie, you usually get... You know, people will clap at the end of a movie. And it was smattered in this one.
I don't know. I don't really base it on that.
Yeah. Just general.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, to me, I don't... I wouldn't call it a bad movie. I wouldn't call it... It wasn't a great movie, but it was pretty good. It was worth
the price of admission.
You know, compared to comic book films like Ghost Rider or Fantastic Four or Daredevil.
Well, I think the problem with Spider-Man 3 is that with the first two movies, the bar was set so high.
But you can't judge it on that. You can't judge it on your own expectations of it. Well, judge it on what it is.
But since it was the third part of a trilogy, I think
it's better than X3.
Yes, it was better than X3, at which X2 was another great movie.
Yeah, X2 was awesome. X3 was not good.
It was Return of the Jedi after Empire Strikes Back. Yeah. You know.
See, I still like Return of the Jedi.
Oh,
so,
yeah. Yeah. But no, I enjoyed it, but I was underwhelmed in comparison to Spider-Man 2. I like you, I loved the Sandman scenes. I thought those were fantastic. I liked the Venom stuff. I didn't hate the Harry Osborn stuff.
I said that to Mark earlier. I said it was the first time in those films I didn't despise James Franco.
Mm-hmm. As Harry?
Yeah, I just didn't like his acting, I guess. I just didn't like his portrayal. But I thought he did a good job in this one. He was a little... He wasn't as much... I think it's when he's, like, you know, being the nice guy that I can't stand him. But when he's a bad guy, you know, when he's, like, bad, evil, you know, which he was mostly in this one, he was better at it. I actually liked his character. I don't know how I felt about the whole, like, you know, snowboarder.
I was just going to ask thing, you what do you think about the alteration of the Goblin glider to like a snowboard glider?
It didn't bother me too bad, only because, you know, it was like the first
That's
movie.
What those hip kids are riding these days, Sal.
Yeah, I was a little annoyed by it, but he was actually, I mean, as far as like just if you just look at that character, Harry Osborn, in the film as its own character. He was actually a pretty cool character. I mean, that was a pretty cool design for his weaponry, and you know, he was motivated, obviously, and it was, you know, I thought it was actually pretty good. Yeah, the snowboard thing was a little annoying, but otherwise...
It looked great.
Yeah, it looked really cool.
I mean, it made for some great action scenes, which we talked with Gabe. He did the subway scene was with Sandman. The original scene where Spider-Man and Harry, that action sequence, while very cool, I was very disoriented through the entire
scene. I think Sam Raimi, and if you look at any of his films, it's like action stuff is very fast and sometimes hard to know what's going on with it because it is so quick.
Mm-hmm.
I would have liked to have seen a little more slower look at some of the action, but
pan out from it a little bit.
Well, yeah. I mean, I thought they did that more in Spider-Man 2 with the Green Goblin, and some of those fights you had some slow motion that really sort of added to it. But you know, once again, that kind of can get tiring. Mm-hmm. So,
How'd you like the black suit?
I thought the black suit looked cool. I
went in and I was just like, man, I don't know how much I'm gonna like this from just the stills I had seen.
Yeah, I thought it looked really cool, and you know, like I said, I liked the whole symbiote storyline a lot more than I thought I would have. But then at the end of it, it was like, well, I wish it was a little more developed. I wish it had, you know, just not been so compressed, because they had to try and pack it in there.
I felt that about Sandman. I would have liked lot more Sandman. You know,
Harry's was probably the most developed, but that's because it started in Spider-Man 2. And
Spider-Man 1, the relationship between those.
So that one was probably the most fleshed out, and the other two were kind of compressed. And
I would have liked to have seen a movie, and here I am nitpicking. I like the movie, but yeah, I look and I say, wow, they could have done some things differently. I would have liked to have seen Spider-Man 3, just a Sandman movie, and see, you know, because
I think you could have taken
him a long time to figure out how to defeat Sandman.
It's like you know, I don't, whichever the Batman 2 with Catwoman and the Penguin.
Mm-hmm.
It's like if you would have just taken either one of those villains and made the film with just either one of them.
I love that movie though. I love that movie. I really like Batman. Was it Batman 2 or Batman Returns?
Returns. I don't know.
I really like that movie.
Well, you're in the minority, my friend. I can't say I really. I don't think it's awful, but I think it could have been. great. I think it would have been a lot stronger of a film if you would have taken either one of those storylines and just made the whole film out of either one of those storylines.
Sure.
I think the Catwoman stuff was extremely interesting. I much rather would have seen just him and the Catwoman, and then Bruce and Selina. Mm-hmm. Those that I thought that was the best stuff of that film. Penguin was just like Danny DeVito, you know. I thought was kind of lame, and it, you know, and same thing with this. Not that I think this one's better than that. I do think this film was better than that as an overall film, but you could have done any of those storylines and just done that.
Do you think from the Hollywood side of things that the superhero franchises maybe make the mistake of having to one up the last movie? That
no,
like,
honestly, I think it's merchandising. I think
you
it's.
Think that's it?
Well, yeah, with a movie like that, it's like, okay, we got Sandman toys, we got Hobgoblin toys, we got Venom stuff, we want to sell all this crap. I honestly believe that's part of it, is that, the more bad guys...
More licensing.
Yeah, the more money you can make from it. I mean, let's face it, you know, at the end of the day, that's what they're trying to do, is make money. So when you spend $300 million to make a film, you got to figure out ways to make that up, and merchandising is certainly a huge part of that. So, yeah, if you can sell 3 different lines of toys, you know, it's like, well, there you go.
Yeah.
You know,
I think did about half that $300 million in the first week.
Well, I'll tell you what, they were running it by me every 15 minutes, and I went to I went there at 10:30, expecting to go in at either 10:45 or 11, and I did go in at 10:45, but I had to stand in line and wait until they let us in, and there was another line for the other 10:45 showing.
Yeah, I got I went with Norton and got there at 8:15 or so, and for the 8:45, I was made Mike save me a seat. There was already a line for the 9:30 and the 10 o'clock
it was packed
shows.
I mean, it was absolutely packed. So I mean, and like I said, I think the audience that I saw with I would say the majority of the people in there don't read comics. You know what I mean? The majority of people, I don't have any interest in. Were they giving away the comic at the theater you went?
No, I didn't.
They gave us with our tickets.
Did is charge me for parking, man.
they gave a Spider-Man 3 like adapted Marvel comic,
mm-hmm.
With Stuart Immelman.
Immelman,
art. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
He did the art.
Yeah,
oh,
he's
kind of cool.
Taking over Ultimate Spider-Man.
Yeah. So. It was sort of a preview of that, but it was the adaption, you know, official adaption or something.
Well, we've talked off mic a little bit today that you know, it's just, and I think with Gabe a little bit, it's time for the Kirk Connor character to be the lizard, you know.
Yeah, you know, the Lizard though is one of those characters I think. Well, it could be interesting for a while. I don't know if you could do a whole film on the Lizard.
Yeah.
But that's maybe just me. I mean, I like the Lizard, but I always felt that about the comics.
Lizard
was a cool like. Fill-in villain mm-hmm. as like a part of another story, and I think you would do that. You know,
well,
that would almost be a better.
Well, for Spider-Man 3, I was really kind of hoping whenever I heard about Sandman, it's like, wow, this is the great time to have a Sandman storyline, and at the same time, Peter's trying to have to save, you know, Dr. Connors, who's turned into the Wizard, which I think would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, they've been doing it since the first film. He's been in there, and, you know, and it's like, when are you going to see him?
Yeah.
So
it's
I guess
like, well,
they got
he turned into the Wizard already.
Well, and that's, you know, with Spider-Man, I mean, he has a big cast of villains, and you could do so many, and he's always fighting multiple villains, so that makes sense as far as with the comic, but mm-hmm. with the film, I just think it's more difficult.
Yeah.
It's much more, but
Sinister Six toys, they could do it.
Yeah, but that, yeah, six villains and a, God.
How you do it, you know, as like a heist movie, because that's what all those guys were usually trying to do is knock over a bank or something.
Yeah, well, you'd have to sort of take a different look at it, and like the villains would almost have to be subplots and have your main plot be, you know, Spider's, because it all comes down to Peter's,
sure.
you know, either reluctance or, you know, want to be Spider-Man, and you know, in this one it was like so much of him and Mary Jane and everything.
I do like Gwen Stacy.
I thought she was great. I thought that she literally looked like the comic book Gwen Stacy.
With the hairband.
Yeah,
and everything.
I mean,
Whatever it was like, it was made clear that was Gwen Stacy. I leaned over to Mike. I was like, I don't think she's going to live through this.
Yeah, I kind of thought that. But that was part of the... It's like, okay, why was she in there? What did she...
She was basically a plot tool to get... Eddie Brock more pissed off at Peter.
But it was pretty lame. I mean, it just like, while it was just, I don't know. I mean, maybe.
You know, I'm thinking, it's like, okay, well, how are they going to, you know, if they do kill her in this movie, which, you know, it was like, well, they've already done the bridge sequence where she died, except
it was Mary Jane.
Mary Jane,
and
she
didn't
die. So how are you going to, you know, because Gwen Stacy is, you know, she's a walking corpse. She has to die whenever you see her.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, I assume sooner or later she's going to, but, you know. I kind of actually did think that going into the film, because there's, like, in the beginning of the film, and not to ruin anything, but, like, it really plays off the second film where Spider-Man is now very much beloved
by popular.
New York. New Yorkers, mm-hmm. and everyone loves him, other than J. Jonah Jameson, but everyone else, is, you know, loves Spidey, and he's, you know, America's, you know, or
New York's sweetheart.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really kind of thought that was going to be what happened, was that she was going to die the same way she did in the comics,
mm-hmm.
and he was going to get blamed for it, and that would turn things around there, but there was no way. You couldn't, you know, that's a whole film in itself if you really wanted it to be.
Sure.
And you couldn't squeeze it into this already kind of packed movie. So, but overall, you know, I don't know. I liked it. I can't complain too much with
any of
these
films. We got to see Spider-Man
films.
On the big screen. You know?
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. It's like I even have watched Fantastic Four a couple of times since I saw it, just because it's like, well, it's still cool to see Johnny Storm flying around and the thing. And, you know, it's still... For me, as a kid, growing up, wishing I could see this stuff, now they can make any of it happen. So.
Well, we had talked on Monday about the Hulk. Now, while the Incredible Hulk movie that we got from Ang Lee maybe wasn't the one that we all wanted.
Or some of us.
But now
some people loved it.
Some people loved it, but I'm really excited that we get another
yeah.
shot at getting a Hulk movie made.
Yeah, and with a good, you know, Ed Norton's one of my favorite actors, so mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to that.
No, Norton as probably a very frustrated, neurotic Bruce Banner, I think is going to be a lot of fun. And
I still to this, I mean, I know people will argue with me, but I thought Eric Bana was the worst part of that Hulk movie.
You just don't like Eric Bana.
I don't think he's a particularly good actor. No. I don't think he I think he's, you know, I don't know what he is. He's, you know, good looking or whatever, but I don't think he's a particularly talented actor. I don't think he watch that what was that? Just piece of crap film with him. Troy? Was that him?
I think he was in Troy as well.
Oh my god. I mean, you know, take out the fact that film overall was just a piece of garbage, but his acting in that thing is just a joke. I mean, it's just bad.
Well, what else? What else do we have coming up here? I know that here in Chicago right now they're doing shooting for the sequel to Batman Begins. Do they have a title yet?
Dark Knight.
Okay, it is Dark Knight.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Okay.
With Heath Ledger.
Is it Batman the Dark Knight?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I'm not positive on that, but I think that's what it's called.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got that to look forward to.
Iron Man. Probably the best cast.
Well, Fantastic Four two. The Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Which I gotta say, man, you know, even if you hated the first one, yeah, Silver Surfer just looks cool in that. So I mean, I'll go and see it just for that. Just
now,
for seeing
him. Is Galactus gonna be?
They haven't said. They have not initially. Initially, they said there was
Marta's over here. Come on, Hellboy 2.
Hellboy 2, eventually.
I still
when
the 2 hours of my life back.
Of Hellboy?
Yeah.
Well, here, why?
Now, here's an opportunity to talk to someone who doesn't like comics, but will watch comic book movies. Are you looking forward to any of these?
I really enjoyed Batman Begins, so I'm looking forward to the second round of the continuing Batman series.
Okay. Hellboy 2?
I went the 2 hours back from the first time I had to see the first one.
Now, we actually, that was directed by
Guillermo
del Toro. And we,
white boy.
We saw, I'm the whitest of boys. We saw another one of his movies this past week on ISC, The Devil's Backbone.
Excellent.
I've been hearing about that.
Absolutely fantastic. If you don't mind reading
I still
want to
see Pan's Labyrinth. Mm-hmm. Well, didn't Devil's Backbone win something?
If it didn't, it should have.
I think it won, like, best foreign something. I'm pretty sure it won an Academy Award for something. Or one of his films did. I don't know if it was that one or Pan's Labyrinth. But was Pan's
Labyrinth
is okay. And that's a foreign film, too. I mean, that's subtitled. Yeah.
Yeah. That's Marta, by the way, for people that were wondering. So you're making your debut, are you making your debut?
No, I'm eating a sandwich.
What are you doing here, anyway?
I got out of work early, so I thought I'd stop by and say hi.
Oh, well,
and
thank
you know,
you.
It's nice to see you during daylight hours.
I know, it's, you know, good to see the color of my eyes.
It is.
And thanks.
You're much more handsome than I remembered in the daylight.
Well, you know, I'm not going to say it. Just stop.
You guys
because
need to be
it's just
going to
get worse. Obviously, Iron Man, we have Gabe told us, you know, that he got called for Wolverine, but he's not sure what's going on that. I know there's a
Magneto
film that's going to be done.
A whole movie?
Yes.
Origin story, baby.
And actually,
Origin story.
I'm kind of excited about it because it's not going to be mutants running around all over the place, I would imagine.
No,
it's
Nazi death camps.
Yeah, it's going to be white stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, sure. So. Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, before Magneto, and it happens to all the X characters. Before they were oversaturated and
they were
became... Yeah, they were a really interesting character. Magneto is a really interesting character before he became, you know...
Well, he's a
villain.
He was
figured.
The great thing about
times.
Magneto, whenever that character was explored, and not overexplored, was that you could understand his motivation, and you could have sympathy or maybe even empathy for what he was going through.
So yeah, he truly be Ian McKellen thing since
I think he's going to be in it some, but mostly no. Okay. Mostly no. It'll be some younger,
younger
man.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's some talk of The Boys becoming a film. We got Whiteout.
Have you seen Hot Fuzz yet?
I have not seen Hot Fuzz.
Oh,
I want to
see
Hot Fuzz.
Hot Fuzz.
I gotta go see Hot Fuzz.
Now that's one that Marty enjoyed, and it was funny.
Yeah, I absolutely have to see
you
that.
Being a connoisseur of action movies, you'll get a lot of the references.
I love parody films.
It has like Cobra parody moments.
See, the thing about that kind of stuff, though, is because there's... For guys like me, there's some part of us that still, like... When Cobra came out, Cobra was cool.
Yeah.
I don't care now, it's a joke, but at the time, when I was 15, chewing on a match and, blowing stuff up was pretty cool. So
Tango and Cash.
I love Tango and Cash. That's one of my favorite all-time action films.
It was good.
I made Marta watch Die Hard. It was one of the first movies that we watched together.
You didn't like Die Hard?
That's not my thing.
I love the Die Hard. I can't wait for Die Hard
4.
But I love the title of it. It's Live Free or Die Hard.
Yeah.
Which I can't get enough Bruce Willis. I'll watch him do anything. I can't. He's great.
It's true.
I will. I'll watch him read a book.
I've
done it.
Are we at the peak of comic movies? Is it gonna?
I don't know.
Do we still have more room to grow? Because I don't know how
peak
long.
Peak of quality or peak of volume?
Both.
I think I don't
volume.
Think
I think it'll hit next
saturation.
Summer. Saturation next summer, and then it'll have to die off for 10 years.
That's what I'm afraid of.
I don't know. I think because there's so. I mean, there's such a huge history of comics that
but
you could draw
a rush
from
to bring them to film. That
yeah, but they all do well. It's not like you... I mean, even the bad ones do well in the box
doesn't
office.
Doesn't mean they're good.
Well, so what? How many bad movies of other genres are made every year? How many bad zombie movies have come out in the last 5 years? They just keep coming out. How many bad horror films in general in the last decade have come out? I mean, they just keep pumping out Saw 5 and,
Chris is always trying to get me to read comic books, which don't always interest me. Like, a flood of bad comic book movies is not going to make me want to read comic
books.
Well, yeah,
but it's a mistake to think that they're making those movies to get people,
I
mean?
But, as Chris is being someone trying to influence... To read comics,
sure.
Shitty movies are not going to make me read comics.
Well, that's and Gabe talked about it. Whenever Spider-Man 4, what's they're gonna make? Because it's gonna make a ton of money. Sam Raimi's done 3 of these now.
Turn it on to somebody else.
Which
I don't know that I am opposed to seeing somebody else take over. I mean, I think he did a fantastic job with the Spider-Man franchise, but I think it would be
Joel
interesting
Schumacher.
To see somebody else. No. I don't. He may not live through that one.
Yeah.
I know they're going to. I know. Going back to movies that are coming up, another Punisher movie, I think, is in the works.
Yeah, and Thomas Jane is really involved. Is he going to be in it?
I believe it's Thomas Jane.
And he's involved with stuff outside of movies.
Some Cal McDonald. He's going to be doing a Cal McDonald film.
Oh, wow.
I think there's talk about that, or it's in.
From Steve Niles.
Steve
character.
Niles. Because, like, the covers now are done by the Punisher Max cover.
Oh, Brad Street?
Brad Street does the covers, and it's Thomas Jane as Cal McDonald. So
now, you've read those. I have not.
They're good. Oh, if you like, I mean, Cal McDonald stuff is, for me, I really
What
enjoy
series
it.
Is that? It's a...
Criminal Macabre.
Okay, that's right.
It's fun. It's, I mean, it's horror stuff. It's obviously, Steve Niles horror stuff. But
have
it's
you been
like
reading
the other
Niles in Bernie Wrightson series?
City of Others? Yeah, I haven't. I mean, not in love with it.
Okay.
I kind of like it, but it's... I'm waiting for it to
come. You like the Criminal Macabre?
I like Criminal Macabre. Yeah, 30 Days. Criminal Macabre is probably my favorite of that, of Niles.
Oh, there's
stuff.
Another movie, 30 Days a Night.
30 Days a Night.
Is that in production now?
I don't know.
It's the list keeps growing.
Call up Tabor from the Crankcast. He'll tell us.
Tabor
would know. We should do a sci-fi series of Why the Last Man.
I wouldn't be opposed. Well, Preacher TV show.
Preacher
that's
TV show.
That's,
and I think that there's been talks of Why and Fables both as getting ongoing TV.
And think of it from this perspective, too. I mean, you have Heroes, which is not necessarily a terrific comic book story.
Mm-hmm.
Is that actually a comic book?
No, but it draws on comics.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's comic book. Those stories are all taken from comic books that have been done in the last 20 years. But, I mean, there's 15 million people a week watching that show. So
I'm still trying to help Chris get over the loss of Gilmore Girls this season.
I heard.
It'll be another season before I can get him on a new TV show.
All right, well, shall we wrap up our Spider-Man trace
discussion?
Yeah,
another round of Gilmore Girls and... other bad TV shows.
But, definitely go see the movie if you haven't. It was enjoyable. I don't think it's going to be remembered as one of the greatest comic book hero movies of all time, but...
You told me you were glad I didn't go with you, because I would have been mad.
I don't think it would have appealed to your movie sensibilities.
I'm not even going to ask what that means.
I don't think you would have enjoyed... You would have walked out of Spider-Man 3 going... Need more action scenes.
I like talking.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of talking. She might have liked it.
She might have liked that. Maybe I'm...
Yeah. Maybe he's...
I like the plot.
I don't... Well,
what I'm going for.
There was a lot of...
good story.
You know, it was all about Peter and Mary Jane and
Gwen Stacy and
Gwen and them, you know.
Relationships.
Did it advance the mythology?
Yeah.
No, because you can't advance that mythology. I mean, you can't. It's been
not
around
too
long.
Not, like, go beyond, but I mean, like, did it develop the character of Peter / Spider-Man?
See, maybe that was sort of the problem with it, is that it really didn't so much. Somewhat.
It was kind of the more of the, you know, with great
same.
Power.
It was, yeah, sort of kind of the same. I mean, I guess it did. I mean, you find out a bit more about Ben Parker's death, a murder. You know, Peter, obviously, he faces another side of himself and
corruptive power.
Yeah, and that whole thing, and his relationship, you know, still trying to figure out his relationship with Mary Jane and whether or not it's even possible because he's Spider-Man. And that was a lot of, I thought, what, you know, the film was him trying to sort of make a decision of, you know, is this really possible? Can I have a normal relationship with her and still be Spider-Man? But
that was such a great Spider-Man moment is when he drops the ring in midair when he's fighting Harry, and it's like his entire motivation is not to beat Harry or get away, but he's got
to
get that ring.
Oh, yeah,
because he's Peter Parker and he can't
even
afford another one.
Yeah, I mean, they show the even in the final fight scene, it's like it had nothing to do with defeating the bad guys. It was saving Mary Jane, which
sure.
is that's Peter Parker. It's not even Spider-Man. That's Peter Parker.
Yeah.
I mean, that's. So yeah, I don't know. It was good.
Yeah.
Go see it. Make up your own opinion. Don't listen to us.
Yeah, and you know, whenever you do, you can chime in on the forum at
aroundcomics.com. We suck and we don't know what we're talking
about.
Don't
know what you're talking about.
I just lost a button. Damn! Every week it's something. My watch broke last week. Now I got a button. Show's not good for me. All right, we done.
Yeah, pretty much. Want to let everyone know that there are a few ways that you can help spread the Around
Comics
love.
Go home and watch the Bulls.
That's right. Go Bulls.
And then the
Bulls
Pistons. De La Hoya, Floyd Mayweather.
I know. It's like Cinco de Mayo, Comic Book Day.
I'm sitting in a comic
De La
shop.
Hoya, Mayweather.
Are you pay-per-view?
Huh?
You got the pay-per-view for that?
I'm thinking about buying it, yeah.
I'm going to Sal's house tonight.
Different than any other
we're
night,
having
Marta.
Fajitas and margaritas, too.
I'm going to
so.
Sal's to watch
You should.
Come on over.
That could be our date night. We'll go over to the Salazars.
No, you're not invited, Chris. Sorry.
Oh.
You can take out Kim.
Oh.
No, she...
Yeah, I wouldn't go out with Chris either.
Stay at home with the dogs.
That's a plan.
Pretty much like every Saturday night.
So how do we find out? How do we spread the love?
You can take us up on our... Stop it.
How do we spread the love other than me hanging out with Marta?
Good.
That's my personal mission, to spread the Around Comics love.
You can. You can take us up on our listener LCS challenge, which no one has done in a long time. So, come on. One person. Help us out.
I think we just canceled that program.
We bet. You can go to the website. Download our flyer. Have your local comic shop display that in the shop. And let us know. We'll mention you and the shop on the show and provide a link to the store at our site. You can become our virtual friend at comicspace.com/aroundcomics or at myspace.com/aroundcomics. Take me up on my personal favorite, the iTunes Music Store review. And the response has been amazing. Thank you to Krogan Man, Marvel Zombie, Ricochet, Preacher Jack, and Neurotic Monkey.
Rick O'Shea, like he's Irish.
Yeah, it's Rick O'Shea. I'm sorry, Ricochet. We'll try and get back. You know, Ricochet said that we're not as good as we used to be. But
he did?
Know, yeah. We'll try and we'll try and capture that magic again.
When were we so good that we have
to
live
up to
it?
Good? It's like, wow. I didn't know there was anywhere to
We've
go
already
to the,
jumped the shark, huh?
Yeah, apparently.
Damn it.
But really do appreciate that. It does matter for those of you out there. I think a lot of people look at the reviews, and that helps make their decision on what shows they should check out at iTunes. So it does mean a lot to me. I really appreciate it.
I think I'm
going to
write
so
a comic
you.
Book with an assassin in it called Rick O'Shea.
Rick O'Shea.
He's an Irish militant assassin.
Right, there you go. You can check out all the great things that AroundComics.com has to offer. It is your source for the best in comic book news, reviews, and opinions.
And we are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. Find more great podcasts at comicspodcast.com.
Just so everyone is aware, we post the next week's topic on Tuesdays or thereabout at our forum at AroundComics.com. We've coming up next week is our 100th episode.
I don't care. I won't be here.
I know you won't be here.
You do whatever you want.
I think Where are you going?
My niece is graduating college, so
Aww.
I have to go down to ISU.
I'm going to be in Normal.
I'm going to be in Normal. I think I'm going to hook up with Steve Bryant and possibly Michael Oliveri while
Great.
I'm down there for a drink or two.
Nice.
So
nice.
I can't get away from it.
We may call you up and see how you're doing.
Sure.
I'm going to be manning the...
I'll be hanging out with college chicks.
There you
Woo!
Go. I'll be manning the switchboard.
Oh, yeah,
here.
And my wife
Jesus,
and kids.
The world's longest show with Chris in charge.
it may not be a show at all.
I was going to say we want to thank InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your source for all things Spider-Man. To help celebrate the release of Spider-Man 3, InStockTrades.com has the new Spider-Man Omnibus discounted 35%. The Omnibus contains over 40 issues and 1,000 pages of the earliest Spider-Man adventures, all for $64.99. You can choose from either the classic Amazing Fantasy 15 cover or the Alex Ross variant cover. Remember that InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And all orders over $50 ship for free.
Yes, they do. Thank you to everyone at InStockTrades.com.
I got to read this, too?
No, I got it.
Oh.
I'll do it.
My name's on it.
It's because Tom's not here, so the order on how we read things is all,
Damn
it's
it.
All jacked up. Damn it, Tom. We are proud to help support the Hero Initiative, which reminds me, I've got a
what?
Great contest idea that I think we're going to tie Hero into. So check back for details
Great.
On that. The Hero Initiative creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give back something to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. Sal?
Yes.
Dave Hardman? Was that
oh,
it?
I thought you were asking for me.
No.
Marta?
Marta
for being
here? My wife? Hello?
Hello.
This is what we do every Friday.
I'm going to tell my wife, just so that I look mm-hmm. like, that it's like you read comics on your honeymoon. Brent Schoonover, brings his wife for their anniversary to a comic shop.
Mm-hmm.
My wife's going to love me after that.
I know. We're making you look
bums.
Good, man.
Good Lord.
Everyone.
You're
gonna Don't worry,
me.
Chris. It's not the first Aren't time you? This has happened to me. I just
Everyone have a fantastic weekend. We'll be back
again. Oh, I will.
Yeah. We'll be back again on Monday with another full-length episode. In the meantime...
In between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love you, baby. Yeah. Why you got my love and love me?
know that you don't love me.